discussion, again, anything specific or something in general? Yes. So I think what we have to see first is that you can't really translate sati as heartfulness. I mean, this is kind of linguistically, you could do that evocatively, but linguistically you can't really do that, because sati, which is a word which has been translated as mindfulness, actually means memory. And means memory in terms of remembering, in a way to be aware, remembering our intention, remembering our aspiration. And then it had a more general term nowadays, which is to be aware, to be conscious. And then what qualifies it is actually when it's called, as in the Eightfold Path, Samasati. So you could then say caring mindfulness. And then that's where kind of the heartfulness comes in terms of that. And so personally, I feel, of course, as you said, the two are important. So there is that aspect of sati, which is being aware, being present to experience. Because in a way, it's a very tricky term to translate. Because in a way, it can mean as much presence of mind, being present to experience in a certain way. It can mean reminding ourselves of our intention, aspiration, which gives us a direction. But with the sama, it really kind of becomes richer in terms of the heartfulness, the kindness, what comes with it. So I would say, yes, the two come together. But I think it's kind of like a compound. We generally, the word, you have sati, which can then have different aspects to it. And then you have the sama, which kind of qualifies it in terms of the appropriateness, the fullness, and I would say the caringness, the kindness to it. So, I would say you need, in a way, the two of them. And in terms of the cultivating the loving kindness, I think it's back to, in a way, the sentences are more kind of, can be used in two ways. One way, the sentences can be used as a focusing device, a concentration device. And for some people, that works very well, to come back to, because it's kind of like nearly an antidote to thought. You know, you can't not generally, I mean, you can sometimes, but generally think two things at once. So if you're on the sentences, you're not going to think of something else. So at that level, it's quite a very good concentration device. And because of the quality that we're trying to approach, it's kind of a, not kind of a harsh concentration device, but a kind, caring one. But personally, I think in a way, the phrases are more as a way of, again, aspiration, intention, direction. And I would nearly say evocation. So what does that term evoke? So in a way, I think, that's why now I talk about experience or quality in terms of seeing that words, different words, will evoke different things. So they will have different resonance. So in a way we can focus on the sentences in terms of as a concentration device, or as an evocation, or we can use it as a like a resonance. So then you don't really have to recite the whole sentence, and you could just bring the word happiness and then connect to that. Anything else? So I think in a way, it's kind of what you're trying to do. Like personally, let's say I did not set out to become a meditation teacher. It happens. You know, I became a nun, not so much to become a specialist of meditation, but because I could see I could not change myself and I kept making the same mistake again. And I thought, can we do something about this? And I thought, well, if I become a nun for a year or two, maybe that might be helpful. And so I ended up in that system of, could say, of Korean son, really by accident. I did not choose to do intensive practice. But I found myself in one of these cultures where when they practice as a monk or nun, if you choose to do that, it can be fairly intensive. So at that level, I had an amazing training. But for them, you see, I think you have to see it in context. For them, the fact that once I came back to Korea after I stopped being a nun and I was living in the West, in Europe, and so I come back and they ask me, you know, maybe 7 years down the line, and I say, you know, they say, oh, what do you do? I said, oh, I teach meditation. They all fell about laughing. You teaching meditation? I mean, you've only been doing this for 17 years. You know, I mean, this is like a bit junior. I mean, there, you know, you would have to sit for 40 years before they would even consider it. So in a way, it's kind of like part of the culture. It's going to be such a culture that you have to do it a long time and that you have to have a mega awakening. I mean, we have to see it's part of the culture. But what is very fascinating with that culture is that it has drawbacks, because only really committed people can do that amount of intensity. So then what's happening in Korea is that there is a little competition between mindfulness, which anybody can do anytime and you don't have to do so much of it, and this really abstruse sun stuff, which is really tricky and difficult. And so people go for the mindfulness. So it's very funny. Because then people are realizing maybe we should make this thing more approachable. So it's kind of interesting, kind of modernity coming to that kind of culture. But in terms of training, for me it was a fantastic training, because it's rare that you can be supported for 10 years to sit 6 months of the year. So for me it was really lucky, because in a way it kind of set me up for life. You know, I really did it. But what I think, it depends what you want to do. Do you want to become a meditation teacher? Do you want to really do it intensely? What are your conditions? And what I see nowadays, especially now with my senior, who have never meditated before, and within a month, they're benefiting from it, from only doing 40 minutes once a week with us and 20 minutes every day. That's all they do. And within less than a month, this is so nice. We're so happy to come. So obviously, you don't need the intensity to get the result. So I think this is what we have to make kind of little difference between how can these, how much do you need for it to become effective? That I think is different from I am going to do this intensely because within that culture, that's the way it's done. So I think we have to see these two different things. That at time, you have the opportunity, like I did, to really do it intensely. If you have that opportunity, it suits you, you can go for it, like I did. But we had, during the 10 years I was there, quite a few Westerners came with the big idea of, you know, becoming monks and nuns and practicing hard. Sometimes they lasted 6 months, a year, 2 days. So it's not for everybody. It's not going to suit everybody. But it doesn't mean the people cannot meditate in their own way. So I think we have to see, I would see the intense practice as like a specialist staff or specialist circumstances, thing of that nature. I don't think it's actually a requirement. But it's kind of a little bit like you might like music, so you might like to listen to it, or you might like learning to play the piano. And then the question is, are you going to be just like doing a little bit of the piano and it's fun, or are you going to become a concertist? If you want to, I mean, I have a young friend. Since he's 7 years old, he's playing the violin. And at the beginning, I must say, it was fairly awful. And now it's fantastic. I mean, he has to practice 3 to 5 hours a day if he wants to be at that level of professionalism. But it doesn't mean somebody cannot play the violin to a good degree by just doing it, I don't know. Possibly you need to do it 30 minutes a day just for your hand, I don't know. So I think it's kind of a little bit looking at what do I want to do? You know, sometimes you take a painting, sometimes mindfulness, sometimes it suits you, sometimes you continue. So personally, I think it's in a way, what's your aim? I know you should not have aim, but we are intentional people. So we have intention, we have goal. And so first is, what is my intention for me? Personally, I would say my intention is to give wisdom and compassion. So I was lucky, I was able to practice in Korea. But practicing in that model was very good in terms of the meditation, but I would not say it was very good in terms of working on relationship in daily life or earning my living in daily life. That I don't think was very helpful. Did not give me any, I mean now yes, but you know, for 10 years I was a house cleaner in order to kind of earn money. So I think we have to see intense practice can be useful within a kind of restricted area. And it's not going, you know, to change your life in terms of relationship possibly or in terms of work or things like that. So we have to see, I'm doing this activity, what is behind it? Is it because I want to focus all my life on it? Then you'll put all your energy in it. Or am I having a more multiple life and then I do this and that and that and that? And there is value in all of these things to make me grow as a human being. So I think there is that. And then I think there is a thing in terms of being a teacher is in a way, what's your intention? Again, and what is the people's intention? And what is possible? I mean, if you tell them you must meditate 1 hour every day, I mean, who knows, on 10 people, maybe one can do that? I mean, just condition-wise. But personally, I prefer, that's why we decided that with the senior, they would at least, we thought 20 minutes, they should be able to do it every day. They should be. So either they do it 10 minutes, 10 minutes, or they do it in a block, 20 minutes, and if they can more. Of course, we encourage a little more to see if over 18 months we have effect, because we have a little competition going with the English people. They're learning English. So are they going to have better result than us? That's a question. And then there is the other who do nothing. Other nothing are going to be better than us. That would be funny. So We'll find out this in 3 years. So in a way, it's what's possible. So I think it's kind of give a range. Not say, you need to do something for it to work. I mean, if you don't do anything, possibly it might jump on you, but possibly not. I think this is a training. This is a training of the mind, so you need to do something to a certain degree. So personally, I would say you could start with 10 minutes every day. And then if the people want more, they can do 20, 30 minutes every day. So I think it's generally better to start small than start big. And then also, personally, what I think is important is also back to specific awareness, specific cultivation when I sit or walk or lie down. I think one also is to give people the be careful to give people the impression sitting is it. Sitting might not be it for everybody. So to really consider the four postures, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. Because one easy way to meditate, and one of our senior found it, she said, every evening before I go at bed, I meditate 10 minutes. Great. She just loves those 10 minutes of meditation lying down. That's part of her practice. I think lying down in bed at night, if you wake up in the middle of the night, you meditate. When you wake up in the morning, you meditate. That's an easy way to meditate. So I think it's also how hard do you make it out to be? How can it fit in people's life? To me, that's what is also important to see. How can it fit? I think we have to see that judging is a creative function. In a way, let's say you meditated for 10 years and you're becoming nastier and nastier and nastier, then you might ask the question, is this working? You know, I mean, or you meditate and you become more and more agitated. I mean, you might ask yourself, is this working? You know, I mean, it could be, am I doing it the right way or is the method good? I mean, long ago, I met this fellow who was one of the first guys who meditated in France and started to teach it. And he was an architect. And then he would announce, this was in the 50s, and he would announce to the, because he had built a little thing in the architect office kind of to meditate, he would say, I'm going to meditate. Others would say, oh, not again, not again. Because when he meditated, he would come out really angry, much more than when he went in. So I think somebody pointed out once, you know, this does seem to work. And then he thought, oh, maybe I should do it differently. So he did it differently, and then it stopped having that not good effect. So I think, in a way, we need, this is judgment. It's a creative function. We need judgment to evaluate things. I mean, that's why we survive. This is evolution. Judging is very important. But then you have what I would call judging as a kind of like, what's the thing between judging as in checking is this working or not in the moment, which is not necessarily useful unless you suddenly feel very agitated. Checking after you've done this for a year or a week or something of that nature. And then the question is, what am I checking in terms of like, what am I judging what against? That's what I found interesting. You're sitting here, I should be better at this. Or is this, I have too many thoughts. Or, I have some anger. I should not have anger. So in a way, I think we need to bring the mindfulness to the judging itself. What is the shape of this judging? Personally, I think we need to become friend with the judging. And in order to become friend with the judging, we have to know it. Because often what can happen is that then we have the judging of the judging of the judging. I should not judge myself. So it's kind of like I would look at what's the shape? You know, when do I judge in a way which is negative? When do I judge in a way which is beneficial? Because I think this is very important to know, is this helpful or not? And like once I met this person who, for many years, she meditated on the breath, and it really was not helping. And so I suggested, you know, just do listening meditation. And she found it really, after that, it was so much easier. So in a way, it's kind of like, sometimes you need to have this helpful judging. Or somebody who say, oh, I can't do this, the walking is, I can't do the walking. And I said, do walking, ordinary pace, long distance. And then it works. Instead of the slow walking did not fit them. If you have a very sporty type, I would say slow walking is not necessarily for you. You need to do something faster. So I think it's kind of like we need to bring a little judging to what we're doing and how we're doing it. That is useful. But then we have to see when does it become what we could call a judging which bring like a negative state, because it's a negative state in terms of it either depress you a little or it frustrates you. And then often what we have to look, am I experiencing this negative judging because I'm actually experiencing an unpleasant feeling tone? And then when I start to have unpleasant feeling tone, I go into judging. Other people might could go into irritation when they have unpleasant feeling tone. Or is it that I'm sitting here cultivating and then I have this idea because I read a book or because somebody told me, you know, like that's one of the things that if you talk to somebody who has experienced jhanas, like if you have meditated for a while, jhanas are heavy duty meditative states. They're very popular at the moment. You know, it's by wave. Different thing becomes popular at different times. So, you know, you kind of meet somebody who's just been to a retreat with this special state, and they felt, wow, you know. And Stephen did this twice, and he confirmed my theory. Then the first time, it was amazing. And the second time, it was so. Because I don't think you can have the, in comparison, it will be amazing. The second time it becomes more ordinary. So sometimes we have to check, what am I comparing? Am I comparing to 10 years ago when I felt, you know, first time I felt really mindful, or the first time I felt my heart was really open? And 10 years down the line, I'm not having this, wow, experience anymore. Well, because you're becoming more mindful anyway. There is no contrast. So this is, what is we judging? Are we judging back in history? Are we judging what we're looking forward? Is it coming out of this unpleasant feeling tone? And that, in a way, the judgment becoming an exploration. To me, this is interesting. You start to judge yourself. What's going on? Once I had this, I cut myself. Just before I was doing a day long like this, so I kind of, you know, blood everywhere, everything. But we managed to do something so we would not bleed all the time, and I could teach the day long. And then we went to see a doctor so he could sew me because I needed stitches. And personally, I thought, you know, come on nowadays, they must have these special modern stitches, like clack, 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 no pain, efficacious, you know. And then the guy brings out this needle and this thread, but huge needle. And then I'm thinking, can I be Zen here? See, I'm supposed to be, you know, this mistress of meditation. And you have all these stories about people, you know, they have done so much meditation, they don't move, and, you know, and I'm like, you know, I don't think I can be Zen here, you know. And then, of course, he takes out something with, he gave me a shot, kind of, so that the thing could be sleeping, and then he could do the thing without me jumping on the thing. And I was so relieved, I won't have to be Zen today. But what it showed me is my expectation. You know, do I go for this kind of, you know, if you're enlightened enough, meditated enough, you are above anything. And so I think that's what we kind of, when we judge anything like this, it's kind of, what am I judging this from? What am I comparing this from? And so it's kind of be interesting to see what is our kind of little, you could say, what's in our mythical cupboard, you know? And time to time we take, that's that myth. Well, maybe not, it's a myth. So that's what I would say to that. Yeah. You see, there is two cases. There is a case of, in terms of the meditation itself, like you are sitting in meditation, and then you see your mind, that juicy story, you know, instead of being with the breath. Or are you talking about, you are in daily life, and you think it would be good if I meditated, but I rather go down to the pub with my friends. So is it the first case or the second one?
It's the second
one. The second one, okay. So the second one is, first, how can you put it in? I think the first thing is kind of like, if you think I need to stop this in order to do that, that's going to be problematic. But I think regardless of you doing that, can I meditate? And what would make sense in my life at the moment to meditate? What would be the length, generally? What would be the style? Would it be good for me to walk for 10 minutes? Would it make sense to sit for 5 minutes and then walk for 20 minutes? What would make sense and how would it fit in my life? I think that's the first thing, to really think about it, not in terms of what you're not going to do, and instead you're going to meditate, because this will be really tough. But just where, how can I fit it into my life? And then find a way, or lying down at night, whatever works for you. One way I would really recommend is to stop at lunchtime, to use lunchtime instead of eating your sandwich on the computer, for example. Can you stop working, doing whatever you do, and for 10 minutes be really present to eating? And then maybe after that, walking for 5 minutes. That's what I would recall. Really a good idea as a break in the middle of the day, 5 minutes, 10 minutes can be really useful. Then there is a question that certain thing I do, and the question is, are they really harmful? That's a question. Or comparing to meditation in my kind of according to different thing, do I think they're not as good as meditation? That's a different thing. We can do many different things. You can go shopping, you can go to the pub, you can go for a walk, you can go to visit a friend in hospital, you can work in your job. And are you doing this thing instead of meditation or not? Generally, you do this thing because there is different conditions. What is, I think, more important is, if I do any activity, is it causing harm to myself or to others? Then, if it's causing harm to myself or harm to others, then the question is, why am I doing this? If we take up, if we, for example, take smoking. So people smoke, and some people would like not to smoke. My nephew smokes, and time to time he stops smoking, and then he generally goes back to it. Because smoking has a function outside of the nicotine and everything. Smoking has a function. It has a function of making a break, stopping, relaxing. It has a function. So if you want, for example, to stop smoking, you would have to replace this by an equally something which would nearly create the same experience and not by something which would be kind of a little lower than that. So in a way, what is it you could replace it which would be correspondent, give you a little relief from stress or whatever it is? So that's why when we do whatever we do, and if for whatever reason we believe it's a little harmful, then the question is, why am I doing this? What am I getting out of this? Is it like if you go down to the pub with your friend, is it just socializing? Is it drinking so I feel better because I'm more relaxed? So this is sometimes with young people, if they do meditation, they still want to go to the pub, but they want to drink orange juice. And then the question is, can I get in the same frame of funny mood if I drink orange juice than if I drink beer? I have no idea. I mean, I don't drink alcohol myself, but you know, this is a bit the question. How can we have a friendly atmosphere without the alcohol? So it's kind of looking, personally I would say it's kind of looking at the different activity. And in a way, what's the function of doing that? And if I really want to replace it by something else, then I would need to replace it by something possibly more healthy or beneficial, which in a way has a correspondent feeling tone or has a correspondent function. Yeah.
It's got to be a better and more practical level of just, if it's a thing of something like an impulsive thing where you're not really thinking about it, you just pick up your phone and start looking at it first thing in the morning instead of meditating, which is something I've done in the past, is just, I just move my phone to charging downstairs and then I can't just pick it up when I'm still half asleep because, so just sort of making the easy impulsive thing, which takes up more time than you'd like it to, just make it
good. So I think in a way we're getting to the end of the day and you've been very good because it was very hot. So thank you very much for your sincerity and being here. It was a pleasure to be with you. And then Katie has some announcements.